Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mondo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mondo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mondo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mondo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mondo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here!
Glad to be here, Joe.
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
All right, I want to welcome all of my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. And, of course, all my fans at rantsradio.com listening in on Thursdays and Sundays.
And it is Sunday, 4:45 p.m. as I speak. A little early, actually, for me to be doing the show if I'm doing it on a Sunday. This is actually Thursday's show done on Sunday. I was having some technical difficulties with Acoustica, which is the mixing program that I use, and for some reason, it's kind of goofy technical thing where the sound wasn't quite matching where the waveform was at. It was making it very difficult to edit some stuff, and I thought that it was a problem within the program itself, so I actually reloaded it. But it seems to be a problem with the way I recorded the that particular piece. So I'm still not really sure what causes that. And I'm going to have to work on that, but it won't affect the show anymore. And it caused me to slow down on Thursday because I was actually in the process of mixing and putting together the show when I was having a problem with that. And, of course, being a work week, it was very difficult. Last week was actually the first week I had a full 40-hour week in a little while. Between the wife being sick, you know, she was in the hospital last week, so I only worked one day, and my paycheck was very, very measly. And before that, I had my own procedure. Actually, I had my own procedure that last week, too. So it's been a really, really crazy few days or so. A crazy few weeks lately. And until my wife gets the surgery that she needs, it's going to continue to be a little bit hectic around here because I'm basically pretty much doing a lot of the work around the house. I'm actually doing laundry as we speak, not by hand. Get that image out of your head. Nobody does laundry by hand anymore if they don't have to. Thank God we live in a place that has a washer-dryer of its own. I absolutely hate going to laundromats. When I was in the service, I hated going down the hall to the laundry room. And you're always waiting on other people. And sometimes you have that here, but at least you don't have to leave your house. You can do it comfortably and cleanly. I hate laundromats because it makes you kill so much a day. And I hate it even more if you don't have a car. When I lived in an apartment complex that didn't have a washer-dryer inside it, we had to go to the common one that was in the complex, and I didn't have a car, so I had to drag my laundry all the way down there and do it and come on back. And it's really kind of a waste because you wind up having to sit around a laundromat all day, and I hate that. While the laundry is being done, I like to, like, watch some TV or do whatever. On Friday, this is what had happened. Friday, as it stands, and we really don't know for sure what's going on, but Friday was supposedly the last day for the temporary workers that we had. They're only supposed to work for 30 days, and actually they extended them for 2 weeks, which they shouldn't have been allowed to do. And I'm going to have a word with the union people about that, because they're the ones supposed to be looking out for that. They either should have been hired or let go. But Friday was supposed to be their last day. And those of us on Assembly Line 9, we had all chipped in $10 or $5 and bring some food for a special lunch on Friday. And in fact, our boss had given us an entire hour to have this lunch. And they actually cordoned off an area of the cafeteria where we can get it set up. And we had barbecue ribs, we had deviled eggs, we had barbecue chicken, some macaroni and cheese, baked beans, coleslaw, a couple of types of cake, just really, really good stuff. And it was just a $10 donation if you didn't bring food, and $5 if you did bring some food. And I wasn't going to have a chance to really cook anything, so I just laid out $10. We had just, you know, and I get there, and it's 8 o'clock, time to go to lunch. I work 3 to 11, and 8 o'clock is our lunchtime, 8 to 8:30 normally. And we get there, and I have some ribs, and I got some chicken, and I got some mac and cheese, and I had some baked beans, and a couple of deviled eggs, and I love deviled eggs. They're lucky I didn't steal the whole damn tray, to be perfectly honest. I had them all on, and I was just getting ready to go sit down when all of a sudden I hear somebody saying, "Gas leak, gas leak," and the alarms go off like crazy. And I thought, you know, these damn Bunsen burners that they're using, you know, set off the stupid fire alarm, and, you know, and they had to empty out the whole plant. But what it turned out was that we actually had a big gas leak over in the back end of the shop. So we're stuck outside, and it's getting a little chilly out. It was chilly and windy outside, and I'm like, damn it. And they're supposed to all go to the back wall as far away as you possibly can. And my car was parked pretty much in the back anyways. I just went to my damn car and sat down to eat. And the only thing that I didn't get was a bunch of napkins. So I wound up having to use my sleeves and wipe my hands on my pants and shit, and I have to wash them all and all that stuff. And it was very, very annoying. We were so looking forward to just being able to sit down and have a nice, you know, big lunch. You know, they were really good barbecued ribs. I really enjoyed it. Good chicken, all that stuff. And it just sat there. It was kind of miserable. The good part about it is there was such a nasty gas leak that they wound up shutting down the plant and sending us home. So I got home a couple hours early. As far as I know, we're still going to get paid for that. I mean, we were there. It wasn't our fault it was a gas leak. So we'll see what the paycheck looks like next week. It should be for a regular 40 hours. Or so. My former supervisor, I saw him arguing with one of his guys, saying, "Oh, no, just the assembly guys are leaving. We have to go back to work." And I was like, what a fucking asshole. And I guess one of the other supervisors, you know, talked to him, and, you know, everybody wound up leaving. And they did wind up letting everybody go. It was just a big pain in the ass because, you know, we had been looking forward to that all day. You know, some people hadn't even eaten, and they were really hungry. I had a couple of quick burritos from Taco Bell before I came into work because I was starving and I wanted to get something in my stomach. And besides, when I get a little appetizer thing going, it makes me more full. But anyway, back to the temps. I was talking about the temps, and I want to talk about that. I feel kind of bad for some of these people because they worked very hard, and they were really just starting to gel on the line. And from the information I have is that Randstad, who is the temporary agency that Siemens uses to hire people from, and pretty much 95% of the people who work there, who work at Siemens where I work, come from Randstad. And apparently there had been a fee that had been waived because they get so much business from us, but then they decided this time they weren't going to waive the fee, and it was supposedly $1,000 a head. And I've talked about this before, and again, that's what Siemens said, Randstad said, and quite frankly, I don't believe anything Siemens says along those lines. I'm still upset about the fact that these guys got two more weeks. They should have been hired. They should have been hired, period. So anyway, Monday, if those people aren't picked up, and there were some rumors that they were going to pick some of them up, we'll see. If they're still there, great. If they're not there, we have a whole bunch of news people because like half of our line were temps. And it's just gonna put a big chunk out of us if we have to go back and either get a whole bunch of new hirees who have to be trained. And they'll probably be there for only 30 days too. And by the time they get set up, it'll be a bunch of more temps coming in. And we don't want that. We want regular employees. When you have an assembly line like that. You want a group of people who know the parts, know what they're doing, and are capable of just doing it without having to be instructed all the time, and who can do it in things in an efficient manner. And the guy we had working there, we'll call him D, he was doing a pretty good job. My complaint about him was that he was always a little over-enthusiastic. I mean, I'm still working on, you know, screwing my parts in, and because sometimes what he has to do, which is loading the stuff, putting the circuit boxes on there for me to put the first parts in, he generally sometimes has an easier time of it than I do. And so if he finishes it, he feels like he can just push it up. And I'm not finished yet. I'm not finished yet. Would you mind waiting a moment, sir? And he would be like, well, I got to look busy. And I was like, look, man, no one's going to let you go because, you know, you're slowed down. I mean, you could either stop with 6 boxes behind me or stop with 2 boxes behind me and make my job easier. And it don't make a difference. You know, I mean, you could have as many boxes behind me as you want, but it ain't going to make me work any faster. You know, I can only do the job that I can do in a certain amount of time. I can't just speed it up. You know, and I'm actually pretty good. I'm not the fastest guy on the line. There's a couple of people who are faster than me, but I'm pretty fast, and I'm pretty good at what I do. And I know the boxes. I know exactly what goes into every box and which screws to use. I mean, I know all of that stuff. So, you know, maybe if he's still there, that's great, and I'll get on him more for just pacing himself with me, because that's really the only thing that's important. So long as I have a box to grab when I'm finished with the current box, that's all you need. I don't need but one box behind me. It doesn't matter if there's 7 or 8. I'm only going at one speed. And if he's still there, I'll work harder with him to make sure he understands pacing, and maybe he'll be a little less tense about getting picked up. Because a lot of it is just nervousness that, you know, they'll let you go if you don't work hard enough. And that's not necessarily true. In fact, in our company, it isn't really true. They don't care how hard you work, so long as you're not obviously lazy, like sitting around, you know, reading a newspaper all day or something. So long as you show up and you know, make a reasonable effort at work, that's really all they care about. Attendance is a big thing. You get fired more for attendance than for any other reason at Siemens, other than actually fighting or threatening to hit or kill somebody or stuff like that. Those are serious issues. But other than that, you know, attendance is really the only thing. I mean, you can take it a little easy and not go quite so fast, and you won't get in serious trouble for that. My former workmate, Dave, came up to me, and he was very upset, as always, with his own supervisor. And he had, as always, he had a whole bunch of new people on the paint line hanging parts, and he was just basically intimidating them into hanging more and hanging them very erratically. And he wasn't even really there to be training them, which is his job, damn it. I don't give a shit what anybody says. That's the supervisor's job, to make sure that these people know what they're doing. And he was just standing around yakking away, talking to somebody else. And you know, Dave, he's just getting pissed off. And he's like, man, why are you telling them to hang like this? What's wrong with you? Don't you know how to train them? And, of course, he got the usual bullshit answer from him. And, you know, and I've talked about this with the union people and some other people, and nothing really changes in that shop. That's why I got out of the paint line, because, you know, it's not that it's difficult work, and it is difficult work and very physical, probably the most physical job in the entire plant. It's just that it's so disorganized, and part of the reason is because the supervisor really doesn't care about anything but the numbers that he puts up, because he gets a bonus based upon that. Do the people on the line get a bonus? No. They barely get a thank you for doing a good job. But as I've said before, I look around my shop, and it is obviously, to me, just a big tax write-off for Siemens to have a lot of minorities hired, and they pay a decent wage. I admit we have great benefits. I mean, I'm really happy with the benefits. I had a couple of medical procedures done that I would never be able to do without. And when you look at my wife's situation, because she's not covered by my insurance for reasons too lengthy to explain here, she has to go through Grady Hospital and go through, you know, their system, and it just takes forever. And she needs surgery. She needs surgery, and the surgery, not having the surgery, the thing that's wrong with her is causing her pain constantly, and it makes it more and more difficult for her to just lead a normal life. And she really can't. She basically spends her day either in pain or asleep from the pain pills she has to take for being in pain. And she sleeps a lot lately. I would think she probably sleeps around, 14, 15 hours a day or so, because those pain pills just knock her right out. And she doesn't have a lot of energy when she is awake, too. But once she gets the surgery she needs done, then it'll be a different story. And hopefully it'll take some time for her to recover, yes, but she'll be able to return to a normal life. She might even be able to go back to work again. That would be nice, though I would prefer she didn't. And it would be even better if we were accepted for her disability, and if she was accepted for disability. That would really help us out a lot, because my income by itself is not going to support us. But it was an interesting day at work on Friday. It was nice to be able to get off a couple hours early, because everybody, it's Friday and everybody wants to just go home. And we actually did a lot of good work before we shut down. It was just a shame that our whole nice lunch got ruined by that gas leak. And I hope there's still a plant to come back to. I didn't hear any explosions or hear about any explosions in the news. So I guess everything's all right there. But we've had a couple of fire drills before, and I just thought it was some smartass pulling the cord. Or I thought maybe, like I said, the Bunsen burners that we were using to keep our food warm had accidentally set it off. But no, it was an actual, honest-to-God, gas leak. Anyway, let me take a quick break, and I'm going to play for you, we have our friends from BuzzFlash, and I'm going to play the clip from The Daily Show from CNN's Crossfire that had The Daily Show's Jon Stewart on, and he really rips into Paul Begala and Tucker Bowtie Boy Carlson. So anyway, give us a couple of minutes. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Tucker Joe Radio Show.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Well, you would think a party that tosses around words like liberty and freedom with calculated abandonment, a party whose leader keeps talking about God giving democracy to the world and sending our soldiers to die for it, well, you would think that this political party would champion democracy in the homeland. But you're wrong. Boy, are you wrong. The Republican National Politburo, officially called the RNC, has been masterminding a Machiavellian effort to suppress Democratic votes around America. From coast to coast, they have used every trick in the book, legal and illegal, to keep Democrats from exercising their right to vote in a democracy. Most recently, the inimitable Paul Krugman detailed just some of the Republican Party effort to rig the election through orchestrated voter suppression of non-Republicans, beginning with bollocksing up the voter registration process for Democrats. The Republicans and their surrogates are throwing Democratic voter registration forms in garbage cans in Oregon, denying Democratic registration forms in Milwaukee, and falsifying college registration forms in South Dakota. And that's just for starters. Ohio and Florida Republican officials have multi-pronged efforts underway to deny Democratic voters a ballot while goosing up Republican registration. Understand that this is happening in virtually every battleground state. If you don't think this is a national effort coordinated by some scumbag from the Bush Family Dirty Tricks Division, you have a rock for a brain. In South Dakota, some GOP operatives got caught doctoring up voter registration forms for college students. They resigned from their South Dakota Republican Politburo jobs. So were they punished? No. They were reassigned to continue their efforts to undermine democracy in Ohio, officially working for the Bush-Cheney campaign. The reality is that this election may be stolen before anybody casts their ballots. On top of that, Ashcroft is making sure that the DOJ won't be able to deal with all the inevitable complaints about disenfranchisement. Quote, the Justice Department is ill-prepared to handle a large influx of complaints about voting rights violations in the November 2nd presidential election, according to a report released yesterday by the Government Accountability Office, unquote, the New York Times reports. So here's the BuzzFlash hypocrite question of the week. If Bush is so eager to send men and women to die in Iraq for a Potemkin village democracy, why is he vigorously allowing his party to stomp on democracy at home by essentially rigging the election? Yes, thousands of people die for democracy and liberty and freedom abroad, including Americans, while Americans are being denied their right as citizens of a democracy in an organized campaign by the Republican National Politburo. That's some hypocrisy. America gets a one-party state through illegal shenanigans while we allegedly export democracy. It's a tragic farce, and the American dream is its victim. To all the Republican National Politburo members, this BuzzFlash Hypocrite of the Week award is all yours. If democracy survives, perhaps you can frame it for your jail cells. Until next week, remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
We're Consolidated International, and we might be looking for you. Are you one of those people who show up, punch in, pitch in, put out, clean up, punch out, head home, throw up, turn in, sack out, and shut up? That's what we need. People we can keep in line. We may have a place for you. Consolidated International. People making things so people have things to do things to other people with. And thinking up more things to do with the stuff we have.
Welcome back to Crossfire. As both of our loyal viewers, of course, know, our show is all about left versus white, black versus white, paper versus plastic, Red Sox against the Yankees. That's why every day we have two guests with their own unique perspective on the news. But today, Crossfire is very different. We have just one guest. He's either the funniest smart guy on TV or the smartest funny man. We'll find out which in a minute. But he's certainly an Emmy Award winner, the host of Comedy Central's Daily Show, and the co-author of the new mega bestseller, America the Book, A Citizen's Guide to Inaction, at your bookstores everywhere. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Crossfire, John Stewart.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's very kind of you to say. Now what? Can I say something very quickly? Why do we have to fight? The two of you, can't we just say something nice about John Kerry right now?
I like John. I care about John Kerry.
And something about President Bush.
He'll be unemployed soon.
I failed to
see. I made the effort anyway.
No, actually, I knew Bush in Texas a little bit, and truth is, he's actually a great guy. He's not a very good president. But he's actually a very good person. I don't think you should have to hate to oppose somebody, but you know, it makes it easier.
Why do you argue, the two of you? I hate to see it.
We enjoy it.
Let me ask you a question.
Wait, let me ask you a question first.
All right.
Is John Kerry really the best? I mean, I think, you know, John Kerry's not
a terrible
guy.
Lincoln was good.
Is he the best the Democrats can do?
Is he the best the Democrats
can do?
Yeah,
this year.
I'd always thought in a democracy, and again, I don't know, I've only lived in this country, that there's a process, what do they call them, primaries.
Right.
And they don't always go with the best, but they go with whoever won. So is he the best? According to the process.
Right, but of the nine guys running, who do you think was best? Do you think he was the best? The most impressive?
The most impressive?
Yeah.
I thought Al Sharpton was very impressive.
Thank you.
I enjoyed his way of speaking. I think oftentimes the person that knows they can't win is allowed to speak the most freely, and because otherwise shows with titles such as Crossfire, or Hardball, or I'm gonna kick your ass, or we'll jump on it. In many ways, it's funny, you know, and I made a special effort to come on the show today because I have privately amongst my friends and also in occasional newspapers and television shows mentioned this show as being bad.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that wasn't fair, and I should come here and tell you that I don't. It's not so much that it's bad, as it's hurting America. So I wanted to come here today and say... Here's just what I wanted to tell you guys.
Yeah.
Stop. Stop hurting America.
Okay, now...
Come work for us, because we, as the people...
How do you pay?
The people, not well.
Better than CNN, I'm sure.
But you can sleep at night. See, the thing is, we need your help. Right now, you're helping the politicians and the corporations, and we're left out there to mow our lawns.
You just said we're too rough on them when they make mistakes.
No, you're not too rough on them. You're part of their strategies. You're partisan, hacks.
Wait, John, let me tell you something valuable that I think we do that I'd like to see you
something
do.
Something valuable?
When politicians come on.
Yeah.
It's nice to get them to try and answer the question. And in order to do that, we try and ask them pointed questions. I want to contrast our questions with some questions you asked John Kerry recently.
If you want to compare your show to a comedy show, you're more than welcome to.
Here's the point.
If that's your goal...
No, it's not.
I wouldn't aim for us. I'd aim for Seinfeld.
Here's the problem.
That's
Kerry
a very good show.
Kerry won't come on this show. He will come on your show. Let me suggest why he wants to.
Well,
come on
we have
show.
Civilized discourse.
Well, here's an example of civilized discourse. Here are three of the questions you asked John.
Yeah.
You have a chance to interview the Democratic nominee. You ask him questions such as, quote, how are you holding up? Is it hard not to take the attacks personally?
Yeah.
Have you ever flip-flopped, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah.
Didn't you feel like you got the chance to interview the guy? Why not ask him a real question instead of just suck up to him?
Yeah, how are you holding up is a real suck up. And, I actually was giving him a hot stone massage.
As
we were doing it. You know, it's interesting to hear you talk about my responsibility to the, you know, I didn't realize that, and maybe this explains quite a bit.
No, the opportunity.
Is that the news organizations look to Comedy Central for their cues on integrity. So what I would suggest is when you talk about you're holding politicians' feet to the fire, I think that's disingenuous. I think you're...
How are you holding up? I mean, come on.
No. I don't, but my role isn't, I don't
but you
think.
You can ask him a real question, don't you think? Instead of saying, you know.
I don't think I have to. By the way, I also asked him, you know, were you in Cambodia? But I didn't really care. Because I don't care. Because I think it's stupid.
Well,
but my point is this. Mm-hmm. If your idea of confronting me is that I don't ask hard-hitting enough news questions... We're in bad shape, fellas.
We're here to love you, not confront you.
No. But what I'm saying is this. I'm not. I'm here to confront you because we need help from the media, and they're hurting us. And it's now, the idea
if
is...
Let me get this straight. If the indictment is... if the indictment is, and I have seen you say this, that Crossfire reduces everything, as I said in the intro, to left, right, black, white.
Yes.
Well, it's because, see, we're a debate show. It's like saying the Weather Channel
that'd be great.
To a storm.
I would love to see a debate show.
30 minutes in a 24-hour day where we have each side on as best we can.
No. That would be great.
And have them fight it out.
To do a debate would be great, but that's like saying pro wrestling is athletic competition.
I think you're a good comedian. I think your lectures are boring. Let me ask you a question on the news.
Now, this is theater. I mean, it's obvious. How old are you?
35.
And you wear a bow tie.
Yeah, I do.
So this is...
No, I know.
So
you're right. Let me just go. Now, come on.
And listen, I'm not suggesting that you're not a smart guy, because those are not easy to tie. But the thing is that this... You're doing theater when you should be doing debate, which would be great.
Well, it's not honest.
What you do is not honest. What you do is partisan hackery. And I'll tell you why I know it.
You have John Kerry on your show, and you sniff his throne, and you're accusing us of partisan hackery?
Absolutely.
You've got to be kidding, man.
You're on CNN.
You literally say,
the show that leads into me is puppets making crank phone calls. What is wrong with you?
Well, I'm just saying, there's no reason for you, when you have this marvelous opportunity not to be the guy's butt boy, to go ahead and be his butt boy.
Yes,
come on, it's embarrassing.
I was absolutely his butt boy. I was so far, you would not believe what he ate 2 weeks ago. You know, the interesting thing that I have is, have a responsibility to the public discourse. And
you
fail
need to get a job at a
miserably.
School, I think.
You need to go to one. The thing that I want to say is, when you have people on for just knee-jerk, reactionary talk...
Wait, I thought you were going to be funny. Come on, be funny.
No, I'm not going to be your monkey.
Go ahead.
I watch your show every day, and it kills me.
I can tell you love
it's so painful to watch. You know, because we need what you do. This is such a great opportunity you have here to actually get politicians off of their marketing and strategy. Yeah, it's someone who watches your show and cannot take it anymore. I just can't.
What's it like to have dinner with you? It must be excruciating. Do you like lecture people like this? Or do you come over to their house and sit and lecture them? And, you know, they're not doing the right thing, that they're missing their opportunities, evading their responsibilities?
If I think they are.
I wouldn't want to eat with you, man. That's horrible.
I know, and you won't. But the thing I want to get to.
We did promise naked pictures of the Supreme
Court. Yeah, we did. No. Let's get to those.
Why can't we just talk? Please, I beg of you guys.
I think you watch too much Crossfire. We're going to take a quick
No,
break.
No. Look,
hold on. We've got commercials.
Please.
Next, John Stewart in the rapid fire.
Hopefully
he'll be here. We hope, we think. And then, did U.S. soldiers refuse an order in Iraq? Luke Blitzer has the latest on this investigation right after the break. Crossfire. We're talking to John Stewart, who was just lecturing us on our moral inferiority. John, you're bumming us out. Tell us, what do you think of the Bill O'Reilly vibrator story?
No. I'm sorry? I don't.
Oh, okay.
What do you think?
Let me change the subject then.
Where's your moral op?
I don't have any.
I know.
Which candidate is supposed to provide you better material?
I'm sorry?
Which candidate do you suppose would provide you better material if he won?
Mr. T. I think he'd be the funniest.
But you have a stake in it that way, not just a citizen, but as a professional comic.
Right, which I hold to be much more important than as a citizen.
Well, there you go. Who would provide you better material, do you suppose?
I don't really know. It's kind of not how we look at it. We look at the absurdity of the system provides us the most material, and that is best served by sort of the theater of it all, you know, which, by the way, thank you both, because it's been helpful.
But if Kerry gets elected, is it good? I mean, you said you're voting for him. You obviously support him. It's clear. Will it be harder for you to mock his administration if he becomes president?
Now, why would it be harder?
Because
the only way it would be harder is if his administration is less absurd than this one. So in that case, if it's less absurd, then yeah, I think it'd be harder. But I mean, it'd be hard to top this group. I mean, quite frankly, in terms of absurdity and their world matching up to the one that, you know, is interesting. President Bush was saying, you know, John Kerry, his rhetoric doesn't match his record. But I've heard President Bush describe his record. His record doesn't match his record. So, you know, I don't worry about it in that respect. But let me ask you guys again a question, because we talked a little bit about, you know, you're actually doing honest debate and all that. But after the debates, where do you guys head to right afterwards?
The men's room.
Right after that.
Right, home.
Spin Alley.
Home?
No, Spin Alley.
What are you talking about? You mean at these debates?
Yeah, you go to Spin Alley, the place called Spin Alley.
Mm-hmm.
Now, don't you think that for people watching at home, that's kind of a drag, that you're literally walking to a place called Deception Lane? Like, it's Spin Alley. Don't you see that's the issue I'm trying to talk to you guys?
No, I actually believe, I had a lot of friends who worked for President Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Went to college.
Neither of us was ever in the spin room, actually.
I went to Larry King's show. They actually believe what they're saying. They want to persuade you. That's what they're trying to do by spinning. But I don't doubt for a minute these people who work for President Bush, who I disagree with and everything, they believe that stuff, John. This is not
here's
a
what
lie
I think.
Or deception at all.
I think
they believe in him.
I think they believe.
Just like I believe in my guys.
I think they believe President Bush would do a better job. And I believe the Kerry guys believe President Kerry would do a better job. But what I believe is they're not making honest arguments. So what they're doing is, in their mind, the ends justify the means.
I hate to say so at all. I do think you're more fun on your show. Just my opinion.
But
John Stewart goes one-on-one with his fans.
You're as big a dick on your show as you are on any show.
Now you're getting into it. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Crossfire. We are joined by Comedy Central's Jon Stewart, host of The Daily Show, and author of number one bestseller, America the Book, A Citizen's Guide
and
to Democracy in Action. Some questions from our audience. Yes, sir, what's your name?
My name's David. I'm from Boston.
Hi, David.
My question is, what do you think the hump on GW's back during the debate was?
Say it again?
What do you think the hump on George's back during the debate was?
The hump on his back?
Oh, you're not familiar? This is a conspiracy here. Can I take this one?
Yeah, please.
It was nothing. His suit was puckering. A lot of people believe he had one of these in his ear. If he was being fed lines by Karl Rove, he would not have been so inarticulate, guys. It's a myth. It's not true. It's a huge myth out on the left about this.
Mr. John Stewart.
Yes, ma'am.
Renee from Texas. Why do you think it's hard or difficult or impossible for politicians to answer a straight, simple question?
I don't think it's hard. I just think that nobody holds their feet to the fire to do it, so they don't have to. They get to come on, you know,
shows that don't, that are too easy on them?
Yeah.
Not
ask
easy
them
on
how
them.
You hold
them
up and
begin by
like
saying
that.
We were too hard on people and too
right.
difficult or contentious. And that
I think you're,
yeah.
All right, John Stewart, come back soon.
John Stewart, good of you to join us. Thank you very much. The book is America, A Citizen's Guide to Democracy in Action. From the left, I am Paul Begala. That's it for
And
Friday.
From the right, I'm Tucker Carlson. Have a great weekend. See you Monday.
Oh, that went great.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.com. .net. Please feel free to email me if there's something you want to talk to me about, or just post a comment on the board, as a lot of people do. We've got a pretty good group of people there who comment and yell back and forth at each other, basically. And before we had Buzz Flash and that last thing, and we had that very great clip of John Stewart on Crossfire. And man, I can't say enough about John Stewart. I mean, he came on that show and, you know, if you look at the video of that, you can tell that, you know, at the beginning, first he was being a little sarcastic with the, you know, stop hurting us, and the line that he said was, I don't think so that you're bad so much as you're hurting America. He sincerely believes this, as do most of us. It's not because we want the press to be of torchbearers for the left. No, we want the press to tell the truth. You know, and the cultists on the right don't understand that, because to them, the truth is whatever they're told is the truth. And reality is whatever they're told reality is. And because they're cult members. I mean, you know, there was a time, and it wasn't that long ago, really, where I just used to think that the Republicans were just another party with some differences. And the truth of the matter is, they're a cult. They brainwash. They get on people and you know, they force people to conform to their belief system, you know, and it's a corporate cult in the same type of sense that where when you're at work, you are asked about, you know, the management makes a decision and you're expected to follow through on it, no matter how stupid the decision is. And no matter what happens, well, if it's something goes bad, they blame you. If something's good, they blame you. They'll give credit to the manager or the guy who ordered the manager to do that. It's kind of like if you're playing football and the coach just go out and says, okay, score a touchdown, you know, this next play. You know, that's not coaching. Anybody who goes out there and coaches like that is not going to last very long, even in the peewee leagues. It just doesn't work that way. The coach is responsible for drawing up the plays. You know, he just doesn't go out there and say, okay, just do whatever and score. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way in a game, and it doesn't work that way in the real fucking world. Yeah, sometimes people are able to pull through shit and get stuff done regardless, because a lot of people do take pride in the jobs that they do. But very often, they're not rewarded for that. The guy who's rewarded for that is the guy who gave them the order to do it. And it's sickening. And it's all part of the cult of the Republican Party. You know, if you believe anything bad about the president, then that's a dangerous thing. But for the people on the news, the people who are supposed to be the news, they're the ones who's supposed to counter the bullshit. They're the ones supposed to be saying, no, this is true. Not, oh, A says this is true and B says this is true. So, you know, it really doesn't matter which is right. That's how we're reporting it, which is what they're doing, which is what Crossfire does. And why Jon Stewart has every right, when invited on their show, to go after them like he did. I mean, you know, he hit Tucker Carlson with a good one. And Carlson said, maybe you should, teach at a journalism school. And John Stewart said, you should go to one. And that is absolutely right. There is a reason why The Daily Show is the most watched news program in the country. At least among the cable networks, anyway. And it's because Stewart's takes are dead on. He's not pro-Democratic or pro-Republican. He is definitely parodying, I'll say that correctly, not parroting, parodying the news media and how they cover things. And the guys from Crossfire don't understand that because they live in their own bubble. Whether they're a smart-ass Republican or a high-horse liberal Democrat, it really doesn't matter to them. Because to them, it's all about who wins their stupid little argument every single time. And that's meaningless. What they say is frigging meaningless because all they're doing – you know, a debate is not two people screaming at each other. You know, Paul Begala said, well, you know, we have people, you know, we have a debate. You know, you don't have a debate. And Tucker Carlson says, oh, we have them come and answer hard questions. No, you don't ask them hard questions. And then they're chewing Jon Stewart out because he's not asking hard questions. It's not Jon Stewart's fucking job to ask tough questions. He's a fucking comedy program. Do you people understand that shit? Have you people lost your fucking minds completely? I'm pretty sure you have. It's just sickening. It is just absolutely fucking sickening to see what's going on in the so-called professional media these days. And what's even more sickening is that these people get paid lots of fucking money to be the way they are. They don't have to worry about whether or not they can pay the rent. They don't have to worry about whether or not they have enough money in the bank so they can go out and get something for dinner in the evening. And I'm not talking about going out. I'm just talking about getting something from the supermarket. Have they ever been in a situation where they had to live on ramen noodles? I know more than a few people out there have done that. I've done that from time to time. Have they ever needed to learn to economize? No, because they always make more than enough money to suit them. And Stewart is damn right for taking them to task. And they were shocked, you know, because as he said, they're nothing more than theater. That is all they are is theater. They don't contribute anything to the process. They take away from the process. They are not beneficial to a democratic society. They are detrimental to a democratic society. And it is sickening to watch the process in action. And then they get on Jon Stewart's case for not asking tough questions to John Kerry. He's not supposed to. Neither is David Letterman, neither is Jay Leno. And although Triumph, the insult comedy dog, who I'm not a particularly big fan of to begin with, hit it quite right when he was on Leno. It was the night that John Kerry was on, as a matter of fact, and he was talking about how Leno was sucking up to Schwarzenegger, and it was about all about the ratings. And, you know, he said, the Terminator gets to dominate the show while John Kerry, a friggin' combat veteran, has to follow a talking dog. That is the level of discourse in this country today. And there was a guy, a friend of mine, very good friend of mine, known him for a long time, and he's a really nice guy. But in another message board that had nothing to do with politics generally, although the subject occasionally comes up, this guy mentioned that he couldn't see that much of a difference between Kerry and Bush, and therefore he just, you know, he doesn't see any benefit in voting. And unfortunately, that attitude is rampant. I mean, voter turnout may be up a little bit, but it's not going to be that much more than it was in 2000. In 2000, it was something like 36-37%. 18% of the people voted for Bush. 18% of the population voted for Bush. And only slightly more than that voted for Gore. About a half a million more, I think 500,000 voters. Or maybe it was 5 million. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Gore got more of the popular vote, but it wasn't that huge a margin. And if you look at the people who actually voted, you're talking about 50 million people that voted for Bush. And that's 18% of the population. Maybe we might drag that up to 25. I was doing some research on the 1960 election between Kennedy and Nixon because somebody had pointed out that, you know, Kennedy stole it, which of course wasn't true because Kennedy supposedly stole Illinois. Even if that were the case, Nixon still would have won. Nixon still would not have won because even with Illinois' electoral votes, he would not have been able to win the presidency. But that's beside the point. What I was looking at was the amount of people who voted, who were registered to vote. and it was 63% of the country voted. That's twice what we have now. Granted, we'd have a lot more people now than we did 44 years ago, but still. And you wonder why guys like George Bush stay in power. It's a two-pronged attack that the Republicans do. They get their base fired up. They do everything they can to demonize Democrats, to dehumanize us, because it's easier for them to insult us if we're not human and we don't, belong in the same category that they do. And they spend the rest of their time trying to suppress the vote. They're not interested in democracy. They're not interested in the idea that people rule. Their belief is that there are some people that are simply better than others, and they have the right to rule through whatever force and whatever means they can get. The law doesn't matter. The law means nothing. The economic stability of the country means nothing, so long as they get what they want. And so long as they get a big enough piece of the pie. The working people of this country are being ripped off by these people. And unfortunately, a lot of them have been suckered into their message. They've bought the bullshit. But there's a religious fanaticism around the current leadership of the Republican Party, their hardcore supporters, and of course their financial backers. Some of them truly believe that George Bush was chosen by God. George Bush apparently believes that he was chosen by God. There was, and they also believe that they can set their own reality. There was an article in the New York Times Magazine today by David Susskind, who co-authored Paul O'Neill's book. What was the title of it? Doesn't matter. Paul O'Neill was a former Treasury Secretary. And in the book, Susskind talked about talking with a presidential aide, and he talked about his conversation. He said, the aide said that guys like me, meaning Susskind, were in what we call the reality-based community, which he defined as people who believe that such solutions emerge from your judicious study of discernible reality. I nodded and murmured something about Enlightenment principles and empiricism. He cut me off. That's not the way the world really works anymore, he continued. We're an empire now, and when we act, we create our own reality. And while you're studying that reality, judiciously as you will, we'll act again, creating other new realities, which you can study too, and that's how things will sort out. We're history's actors, and you, all of you, will be left to study, to just study what we do. And he went on to elaborate on the point that Beachon made in the comments section. Basically saying that the only people who are real people are the people in the flyover states, the people in the middle. People on the East Coast, people on the West Coast, they don't count because the people in the middle outnumber you 2-1. That's sickening. But that's the state we live in today. And I was talking about this on the blog. There's about 2 weeks left in this election. And remarkably enough, there's still quite a number of people who are undecided. And I like what Jimmy Breslin said about that. He said that people who are undecided at this point in time don't have much of a mind to be made up. And once again, this country stands at a crossroads. Now, I've said this before. We've really already lost the important battle. That was in 2000. But we do have one more chance to turn the tide and avoid a disastrous next 4 years if the Bush administration regains office. Now, of course, this radio show supports John Kerry, and despite my former reservations about him, I thought he was too establishment, I now stand behind him all the way, especially after his performance in the three debates. He looked remarkable, and he totally impressed me with how he handled himself, especially when you consider, how badly Bush looked. It didn't hurt him that Bush looked like an idiot all those times. But Gore is a great debater, and Gore had trouble with Bush, and Richards had trouble with Bush. John Kerry just stuck to his message and did a great job. And he countered Mr. Bush at every single opportunity and did a very good job. But more than just a vote against Mr. Bush, a vote for Senator Kerry is a vote to affirm that the American Democratic Republic is still alive and kicking. It's a vote to confirm that we haven't abandoned the idea of self-rule in favor of a semi-nobility of corporate CEOs and their political toadies. We have a long way to go to reverse the damage that's been done over the past few years by corporate America. But I still believe, naive though it is, that we can accomplish this. Things were a lot worse for American workers a century ago, and there's no reason to believe that we can't overcome the obstacles we face now. Juan Cole, in an excellent article, describes the Bush administration as a right-wing version of Mao Zedong's Great Leap Forward, in the sense of political ideology trumping reality. Under Mao, they were basically told, this is what will be done, and people who disagree with it were punished politically or put in prison, despite how reality said things worked. Forcing people to do things that simply were not possible or were far more difficult given that the tools that they had. 9 million people starved to death in China due to those policies. 9 million people. I'm not going to suggest that that's going to happen here in this country, but it's certainly going to get worse for working class people. Where Mao's Great Leap Forward was in part about modernization, and it was an attempt to modernize, albeit a stupid one, our Great Leap, if Bush gets in again, is and will continue to be a backwards one, because they want to turn the clock back to the days of the old Gilded Age, about a century ago. And that was a point where government was little more than the tool of powerful corporations, only now these corporations have a global reach. Remember what Teddy Roosevelt said. Progress is the constant struggle between those who earned more than they possess and those who possess more than they have earned. George Bush didn't earn an entire penny in his life. Everything he got from his family name. Every chance he's had because he could take the time. He didn't have to worry about going to work 40 hours a week and putting food on the table. He didn't have to worry about that. He's never had to worry about that. And he just doesn't understand people like me. You're poor, it's your fault. Because you're not aggressive enough to play the game or you're too stupid. In fact, during the third debate, that was one of his big deals, talking about, you know, what does he say about someone who's lost their job? And he said, oh, we're doing all this with education. You know, no. It doesn't work that way. It is the president's responsibility, it is the government's responsibility to make sure that we have a stable economy so that people who want to find work can find work. And as I said before, don't pay attention to statistics. The official unemployment statistic still sits around 5.5%, 6%. The actual statistic is much higher because there are a lot of people who have simply dropped out of the workforce altogether, are no longer looking, and are no longer collecting unemployment insurance. Those people are not being counted because they don't go into the system. But if Bush gets another 4 years, things are going to get even worse. It'll be a total disaster for working people. And despite the BS you hear from the Republican Party, our taxes will continue to go up, as they have for us, in other ways than federal tax. And our ability to pay them will go down. The only ones who are going to be able to prosper are the ones who are the best at rigging the system for their benefit, because that's how these people operate. Find a loophole and exploit it. Not every one of us has that option. All this talk about ownership society is bullshit, because there's a lot of us down here at the bottom who are never going to get the opportunity for that simply because we're never going to earn enough money to do that, do anything above and beyond just pay the rent. And some of us can't even do that. And those who want nothing more than to work an honest job and support themselves and their families are going to suffer more. Now, David Susskind's article opens with a prediction by another Republican that should Bush be installed for another 4 years, there's going to be a revolt within the Republican Party. I don't believe this for a fucking minute. Because over the last 3 years or so, I have come to believe that the Republicans and the hardcore supporters are nothing more than a cult. They're not a political party. I mean, ever since Lincoln was shot, and even more so since Teddy Roosevelt abandoned the Republicans over progressive issues, the Republicans have had the same mantra over and over again. Help the rich and the rest will follow. The direct result of this attitude of following this mantra, regardless of reality, were two world wars and a Great Depression. And we're heading back to days like that again, simply because all the money is being sucked up at the top by the people ripping you off, and that's exactly what they're doing. Their unchanging and blind faith in the unfettered free market system nearly brought this country to the brink of revolution. And if it wasn't for Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the New Deal, this country might have become a communist country. You think it sounds silly, but it's true. I've talked to people who lived during those times. They know. They were there. Roosevelt struck a happy and powerful medium. Because if you look at what was going on in the rest of the world at that time, people were turning to either socialism, communism, or fascism. Roosevelt knew we didn't want either of those. And he understood that the government has a role that it needs to play. Bush and their people don't understand that. They see their role as, they see the government's role as basically helping them to help themselves. And that's really all they care about. And it's a damn disgrace that it's continuing to go on in this country. And it's a damn disgrace that the Bush people are so blindly following what's going along. According to the History Learning site, talking about the Great Leap Forward, Mao Zedong had introduced the Great Leap Forward with the phrase, "It is possible to accomplish any task whatsoever." By the end of 1958, it seemed as if his claim was true. However, in 59, things started to go wrong. Political decisions and beliefs took precedence over common sense, and communes faced the task of doing things for which they were incapable of achieving. Party officials would order the impossible, and commune leaders who knew what their commune was capable of doing or not could be charged with being a bourgeois reactionary if they complained. Such a charge would lead to prison. Quickly produced farm machinery produced in factories fell to pieces when used. Many thousands of workers were injured after working long hours and falling asleep at their jobs. Steel produced by the backyard furnaces was frequently too weak to be of any use and could not be used in construction. Its original purpose, could not be used in construction, which was its original purpose. I'll read it right. Buildings constructed by this substandard steel did not last long. Also, the backyard production method that had taken many workers away from their fields so desperately needed food was not being harvested. Ironically, one of the key factors in food production in China was the weather, and 1958 had particularly good weather for growing food. Party leaders claimed that the harvest for 1958 was a record 260 million tons, which was a lie. And the Bush administration and its people lie just as much. Everything is not going swimmingly in Iraq. In fact, they had an entire, a platoon of soldiers who were detained and reprimanded because they refused to go on what they considered to be a suicide mission. Support the troops, my ass. And I'm sure there's a part of the Bush administration that wants Iraq to become a huge morass because the resulting increase in the levels of terror would be good for them politically. It's just sickening. I hate to end the show on such a bleak note like that, but we're running out of time. The clock on the wall is showing me running out of time. So let me just say thanks to everybody on Rant Radio for listening. I'm sorry you didn't have a new show on Thursday for you. When I have these technical difficulties, I will deal with them as best I possibly can. And actually, I've discovered that I'm still having the same problem, so I'm going to have to work on it. It won't affect this show. But it shouldn't affect next show either. We'll see what's going on with that. It might just be a memory situation. I'll check into it. But in the meantime, this is Joe Vecchio from the Cup of Joe Radio Show signing off. I hope you all have a good few days, and I will see you on Thursday. Bye.
Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe radio show, is proud to be a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 2127. However, the views of Joe Vecchio do not necessarily represent the views of Local 2127, the IBEW, or its affiliate, the AFL-CIO. Please remember to support your working brothers and sisters and help keep the American dream alive. The Cup of Joe radio show has been a production of Jove Enterprises Incorporated.